Welcome to Grumpy Strategists, episode 56. I'm your host, SAA's Michael Shoebridge, and I'm joined out on the beautiful Lake Burley Griffin today by Dr. the Reverend Marcus Hellyer, the head of research, geopolitics, geoeconomics, and hypersonic missile programs here at SAA. Marcus, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Michael. It's a beautiful day here in Canberra. We've come down out of the mountains, and we're going for a test paddle on the HMAS Shoebridge. Well, it's yet to be named. We'll leave that open.
But new ship Shoebridge
that you recently built in your garage. It is a beautiful piece of work. I'll tell all of our listeners in a completely unrestrained way. It is a magnificent piece of work. Even the towed array, it functions straight out of the box. But it is a beautiful kayak. So congratulations, Michael.
Thanks very much. I'm just pleased, Dr. Hellyer, that you fit into the payload module.
And so. You're going to launch me out of that. You're going to launch me out of that.
Well, we're going to launch right into this podcast.
Well, look, last episode I was tromping around the Brindabellas with the SES, the State Emergency Service, looking for this mythical yowie yeti beast out there that we didn't quite manage to find. Turns out hasn't actually been designed yet.
Yes, this definitely a mythical future
biggest,
beast.
Biggest restructure to the defence organisation in 50 years beast hasn't actually been designed yet. But there's been another reported mythical beast out there, Michael. You wouldn't believe it.
This is getting weird.
It's getting really weird because it's apparently called the U.S. AUKUS Review.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that.
Yeah, but nobody really knows what it is.
Haven't there been two sightings, though? I heard that Paddy Conroy and I think Dickie Miles, rather than Richard Miles, have spotted the beast. Well, except when pressed, they can't say anything about it. So.
Well, according to the media, for what it's worth, the media.
Yeah.
Mr. Miles refuses 12 times to say what the Americans want in the AUKUS review. So you just start to wonder, does this thing actually exist or not?
Look, Richard Miles is four times the saint that St. Peter ever was. Do you remember the biblical story? Peter denied it three times before the conference.
So four times three is 12?
Yeah, Miles has denied the AUKUS review 12 times. So that makes him a saint.
Well, look, all I can say is I'm not going in search of this one. Like, last week you sent me out to look for the first Yowie. I was out there for so long. By the time I got back to the bunker, the Defence SES, the Senior Executive Service, all 199 of them had actually shown up with their drivers and eaten all the party pies.
They had eaten the party pies.
I'm not falling for that one again. If you want to find the AUKUS review, you go find it yourself.
No one could cater for that number of senior executives, and they were voracious. It was like they hadn't eaten
for a month. As I can say, you can take the boy out of the public service, but you can't take the public service out of the boy. If there is a morning tea with party pies, they just become feral.
Look, I don't want to get into this, but the people in senior military uniforms ate as many party pies as the men and women in suits. Right. That's all I'll say.
Anyway, so look, we haven't been able to track down the latest Yowie, but let's, you know, have a think about what could possibly be in it.
Well, I only know three things.
Mm-hmm.
One, there's been an AUKUS review by the Americans.
Yeah.
Two, it's been handed over, apparently, to Dickie Miles and Pat Conroy.
Mm-hmm.
And three, it's all great news because it's strengthening AUKUS. So Richard Miles says it's strengthening AUKUS. We heard this at the AUSMIN meeting in Washington that happened.
Oh, so if it's strengthening AUKUS, wouldn't you think that would be a good story to get out? If you were a supporter of AUKUS, as Mr. Miles is.
Strengthening AUKUS is all good, isn't it? So the bit I'm left wondering is, if it is just strengthening AUKUS, which is such a great thing for the three nations, why isn't he on the front foot with this good news?
I'm not sure. I mean, because what could possibly be bad about AUKUS? I mean, okay, let's do a bit of role play. I'm Elbridge Colby, sort of known AUKUS cynic. I'm sort of looking at this AUKUS arrangement, and the facts on the ground seem to be there's not going to be any more US Virginia-class submarines in existence by 2032 under the AUKUS plan than there would have been under the pre-AUKUS plan. So he hasn't got a lot of submarines to go chucking around. So
look, you're dead wrong there.
Oh, okay.
It's not that there aren't going to be any more submarines in 2032 than there were pre-AUKUS. There are going to be less submarines now.
Sorry. And
Elbridge Colby will have discovered that. In fact, luckily he got rolled by the State Department and maybe Commerce and I think the Treasury too, because of the rivers of Aussie cash coming over. But there will be less American submarines because no nuclear submarine has been ordered since AUKUS was announced, and the delivery schedules of the ones that were ordered already when AUKUS was announced have slipped by years.
Well, what's 3 years between friends, Michael? So, but if you're it's Elbridge Colby,
the time Trump has left as U.S. president.
If I'm playing role playing Elbridge Colby, I'm looking at this going, hang on, okay. So the boss, the Trumpmeister, has said full steam ahead. So I'm going, all right, I gotta hand these boats over, boats I don't got, to these guys who I'm looking around at Henderson, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of infrastructure happening there. And gosh, they're gonna need hundreds, thousands of nuclear qualified, uniformed and civilian personnel, and that's only just starting to ramp up. Plus, they got to keep their Collins class submarines going because they can't just walk away from Collins as soon as the first Virginia shows up. But they're already putting more people through the Virginia training pipeline, through the Collins pipeline. So I'm not sure how they're going to. So I'm looking at this. There seems to be a few challenges here. So I'd kind of like to see a more explicit plan showing how those challenges are going to be addressed. Yeah, that's my channeling of Elbridge Golby.
To say, so if AUKUS needs strengthening, it must have some weaknesses. Is that your point? Because that's...
Look, that's your word. That's not how I'd put it.
Yeah.
I'd just say less advantageous advantages.
Even better than it was before.
So there are some less advantageous advantages to AUKUS, and we need to maximise the advantageousness of them.
Yeah. Well, before we get on, because the obvious thing there is if Australia isn't in great shape implementing our parts of AUKUS and running our existing submarine, and America isn't making any more submarines. In fact, it'll have less when it needs to hand them over to us than at the start of the plan. The obvious good news has to come from the other AUKUS partner, the UK. But before I leave this, I will say three democracies, America, Australia, UK, elect our governments to spend our money.
Yeah.
The largest tri-nation endeavour in our three countries' history is AUKUS. $368 billion.
And we get 50% of that is contingency. It's not actually real money, Michael.
Don't worry, there's no risks in this that we'd need that money for. The largest program in our three-nation joint history, and we get no transparency from our elected officials about a review, what the review means, apart from a blithe assurance that it's all about strengthening it. So I think that's unacceptable in a democracy. And Dickie Miles should look himself in the mirror and realise he's letting himself down and he's letting us down.
Well, I would just say that both the government and the Defence Department do have a bit of form in lack of transparency. So if we just cast our minds back a few months to October estimates.
Yep.
Now, you just mentioned that if there's problems with the delivery of submarines from America, well, then there's always the UK. The SSN AUKUS program.
Yep.
So maybe we can get submarines from the UK a little faster.
Maybe the UK is the White Knight, Sir Galahad.
How are they going? Well, this senator, I don't know if you've met him, David Shoebridge, I think is his name.
Yeah, I've met him.
Okay. Yeah. He asked some questions at the October Senate estimates, basically wanting to kind of get a little more detailed information about the AUKUS program, like schedule and milestones beyond the kind of blithe big picture stuff we've gotten so far.
Yeah.
And so he asked some questions about, so what is the design process that the UK is using for their submarines? What are the key design milestones or design reviews? What have they done already? what's still to come, you know, and what do they need to do to get into production? Well,
they're very reasonable questions. And that's I would have thought they were that's quite... an elected representative asking those in the parliament. So it's not like just you or me asking. So I bet the answers were pretty solid.
Well, at the time, when they were put on the spot, the officials were very obliging. So Senator Shoebridge said, "Do you know when the next plan design review is and when it's intended to be completed?" And then an official says, "Well, that's been taken on notice and we'll give you a more detailed plan in the longer term."
Ooh, okay.
And then the senator said, "There must be a detailed schedule. You know, can you provide that?" And yes, we can provide that.
The official said.
The official said. So very obliging.
So they've had time now.
Yes, and they have responded.
What have they said?
Well, so in answer to the question, what is the design process, you know, what design standards are being used for SSN AUKUS, we have a somewhat detailed one-sentence response.
Is it a long sentence?
Well, not very long. The United Kingdom's process for the conduct of engineering and design reviews is based on BAE's, so the company designing the submarine, BAE's life cycle management process for design, build and delivery of defence systems.
Okay, so the process is whatever this company
says. The process is BAE's process.
The process is the process.
Yeah, well, what is BAE's process? Well, I'm sort of looking in the... No, we're not going to tell you that. We're not going to tell you what the process is.
There's a little bit of wiggle room there. It's based on BAE, so it could be different. Who knows?
Yeah, but just to make sure you got that point the first time round, they provided a second answer to a related question. And that answer says, see our previous response.
Right. Sorry.
Then we move on to the question of what design reviews have been completed already on Snorkus.
Okay, well, that's simple and factual.
Yes, so but the answer is simple but not terribly factual. Mm. So early design work commenced in 2021 on the next generation submarine, now known as SSN AUKUS. Then we sort of get some unsolicited editorialising with the design continues to make positive progress. I'm not sure is there another kind of progress? Is there negative progress?
But it sounds like it's a child, doesn't
so
it?
So we're not going to give you the information you want, but no. We will give you some editorialising you didn't actually ask for.
But we're all doing very well.
And in August 2023, the UK committed additional funding through until 2028 for the continuation of the design phase of Snorkus. So where we are in that process, we're not going to say. Design reviews are built into the process. Well, that's very reassuring. That's very as required, two have taken place so far, with the latest held in 2025.
Now, there's a slip. The officials have actually provided a data point that there have been two reviews.
We won't actually say what those reviews were and what they allow you to move on to
in the
process.
Somebody's in trouble for releasing the two number.
So apparently we have done two design reviews. Okay, and moving on to what's the next design review and how does that get us to the start of construction? We have two sentences. The next design review is planned for 2026. The UK currently anticipates that it will be completed by the end of the year. Now, what that review actually is, what that allows you to do, is that the start of detailed design? Is it the start of construction?
Is it
like
preliminary design?
What actually is it in engineering terminology that people understand? You know, so this is actually the complete contempt that defence officials hold
the
public and the parliament in. We will not... Well, first of all, we'll give you detailed information and then we won't give you anything.
They don't. They say they have
whatsoever.
The detailed schedule. They say they'll provide it and they don't. Well, so what you're saying is Richard Marles refusing to say anything about the AUKUS review 12 times is just him reading his briefing pack.
Yes, well...
Because that's what the bureaucracy would love him to say.
Mr. Marles does have that in common with Vice Admiral Meade.
Yes.
So... You go, well, there's no way for us in the public to really know what's going on inside the Snorkus program. But it doesn't seem that Admiral Meade really wants to know either, because at the more recent estimates, so last week, one of those pesky senators, I don't know if you know him, but anyway, you know, mentioned a review being done by Lord Case.
Yes.
The man formerly known as the Secretary of State for Defence in the UK, who is looking at Barrow, the submarine building town.
Team Barrow.
Team Barrow.
Barrow ready. Ready for the workforce and skills and housing to produce the submarines required by the UK and Australia.
Yes, because you might recall, the UK is currently delivering one Astute-class submarine every 3 years, approximately, except when it goes even slower.
Well, it took 13 years to build the sixth Astute, which is not in service yet.
So currently they want to do one every... They're doing one every 3 years, but they want to go to one every 18 months, and we want one every 3 years. So instead of one every 3 years, it's going to be three every 3 years on top of, you know, the mega SSBM. So
they
need
program.
To at least quadruple production. You know, and it's not just steel, it's reactors. Yeah. You know, it's everything that goes into these things.
And so, to do that, the little town of Barrow has to get quite a bit bigger, because it doesn't all happen in Barrow, but a lot happens at the BAE yard in Barrow.
So Lord Case is now heading Team Barrow, which is sort of working out how do you actually get enough skills into Barrow to do this. And he actually said, oh, it's a bit challenging. It's a bit tricky. We're behind the eight ball here. Things not actually where we need them to be right now. And this rather rude senator race at it estimates.
Well, just wait a minute. I mean, Lord Case was giving testimony to the UK Parliament, so he felt he had to give them some facts. Now, that's something...
So, and what's your point?
Well, that's a UK Westminster thing. I mean, it doesn't
what
happen
they,
here.
What
but
would
the... just for our listeners, in case they're unfamiliar with UK processes...
A parliamentary UK, system where officials give information to...
They feel accountable to the Parliament.
To the
they
parliament.
Have to give them information.
What a weird concept.
Strange. Yeah.
Anyway, this rude senator put, you know, this loyal, you know, public servant, Vice Admiral Meade, on the spot and said, what do you think about all of this?
I will say he snarfed down quite a few party pies in the bunker. Yeah.
Anyway, the Admiral said, I have not spoken to Lord Case. Okay, fine. But I have spoken to the Submarine Delivery Agency very recently. Ooh, I've spoken to the Ministry of Defence very recently. I've spoken to the CEO Global of BAE and all the key people in BAE. I've spoken to the Chief Nuclear Officer. All tell me SSN AUKUS UK is on track.
It's on track.
It's all on track. Why? How do I know this? Because these people tell me. Those are the people you're handing vast sacks of gold over to. Surprise, surprise, they tell you everything is fine. I mean, this is the most ludicrous lack of curiosity I've ever encountered.
You know, I'm just thinking, Admiral Rickover, the guy that set up the US nuclear submarine program, he was an utter bastard. But he was as interested in what might be going wrong as what was going right, because if he got an inkling that something wasn't going well, he was all over it like a rash. Whereas what we have with Admiral Meade, our Australian submarine
agency... I'm doing an Admiral. I'm just sticking my fingers on my ears, Michael. Yeah. I can't hear you. I don't want to hear what you're saying. I don't want to hear it. Are you going to tell me everything's fine? I'll listen. No. Oh, hang on.
Any news outside his little bubble... He doesn't even show an interest in. So this is Lord Case looking at Team Barrow testifying formally to the UK Parliament, talking about problems and challenges. There won't be enough houses, not enough infrastructure, not enough healthcare. It's a real risk to the UK submarine program. How is it that our Australian submarine agency head could not even know about that? And when he's told about that, remain disinterested?
But... the ludicrous thing, well, first of all, you mentioned Rickover, and this legendary figure who was, by all accounts, a total asshole. One of his famous quotes was, if senior leaders are not across the detail, how can they expect their subordinates to be across the detail?
Yeah.
Well, here we have the leader of the program who isn't, if he's either he's across the detail and he's not willing to share it, or he's just not.
Well, he says he hasn't spoken with Lord Case, he doesn't know about it. And every time he's asked something outside something he already wants to talk about, he doesn't know about it. He knows about nothing going on in the UK on their submarine program,
he does,
except for what the official UK government
line is.
The UK
tell him it, so what do I need to know? But if we go back to the 17th century when you and I were both in defence and we were in this part of defence called contestability, our job was to ask awkward questions.
Yeah.
And people hated it.
Mm-hmm.
okay, because you kept saying, well, what's the evidence for that? What's the evidence for that? What's the evidence for that?
You can tell me it's good, but show me why you say that.
But we, because this is a UK program somehow, we're not asking those questions. It's, well, no, there's a firewall here. It's a UK program, so I can't tell you about schedule because the UK owns that.
Yeah, and any uncomfortable fact in the UK space, I don't need to engage in because the UK is managing all that.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a joint program, is it? So we're just supplicants to the UK in this program.
All right, so look, we've got this Lord Case guy. I mean, he may have been former Secretary of State for Defence, but what does he know about nuclear submarines? Has he ever even been on a nuclear submarine? Mm. I mean, who in the UK who knows nuclear submarines is criticising the program? Is there anybody? I don't think so.
Well, Admiral Meade doesn't think so, but I found somebody who is, and it's in something, it's an obscure source called the Telegraph newspaper.
Oh, the telly, what would they know? What? So they've found some drunk sitting in the corner of a pub in Barrow, casting nasturtiums on the submarine program?
Well, this guy is called Philip Matthias. I may not have got the pronunciation right, but Philip Matthias.
Well, who is he? Like, retired what? Retired?
Well, let me tell you what he said. He said, okay, Britain is no longer capable of running a nuclear submarine program after catastrophic failures pushed it to the brink.
Well, how does he know? I mean, anyone could say that. How does he know this?
Well, this Philip Matthias may know what he's talking about because he's retired Rear Admiral Philip Matthias.
Yeah, but does he know anything about nuclear submarines?
Well, yes, because he's the former director of nuclear policy at the UK Ministry of Defence. So someone who is immersed in the detail of these programs and capabilities.
Well, yeah, but other than that, I mean, what does he say?
Well, he said a few things that I know Admiral Meade won't have read because it's not from a BAE or current UK government official. Mm. And he's got assurances everything's great. But this very informed person who's spent a career around these technologies.
Well, I think just bitter and twisted, but anyway, yeah.
He says, performance across all aspects of the program continues to get worse in every dimension. This is an unprecedented situation in the nuclear submarine age. It is a catastrophic failure of succession and leadership planning. And he goes on to say the public, he means the UK public, not us Australians, of course, should be aware of the gross mismanagement of this hugely expensive and important program.
No, the public doesn't need to know about gross mismanagement.
Well, our adversaries certainly will be, not least by counting our submarines alongside using satellite imagery and reading audit reports already in the public domain. See, it's interesting he uses the term adversaries because he knows that the employees of our Australian submarine agency from the head down take no interest in these matters.
Well, so there is that little issue there, he goes. The bad guys will know how many submarines are tied up alongside. So how many of the UK's current six SSNs are currently tied up alongside? I think it is a number somewhere between 5 and 7.
Well, only 5 are tied up because the sixth one that's been built, Agamemnon, although it's been commissioned, isn't actually in service yet. So technically only 5 of them are tied up. But
let's flip this around. How many are actually at sea performing operations?
None.
Right, okay. But ambush? The bad guys won't know that.
Well, I think they do.
And if we told the public that, then the bad guys would know because...
I think they may have spotted them. Ambush is currently inactive, having spent 1,222 days, more than 3 years and 4 months in port. Sister vessels Artful and Audacious has got a bit shy, I think, are undergoing sluggish maintenance programs, having both spent more than 950 days out of action.
Well, yeah, that's less than 3 years, though.
Astute and Anson are also in port. Yes. And the last one, HMS Agamemnon, the one I mentioned, got commissioned before it was accepted into service. Mm-hmm. So it's not actually operating, but it's been named Agamemnon.
Yes.
The uncomfortable truth is that she took over 13 years to build, the longest ever construction time for a submarine to be built for the Navy.
Right. So it's actually taking longer to build submarines just before we hit this deluge of needing to build 3 to 4 times as many
build
submarines.
More right, faster than ever before. And so I do not, if I was Admiral Meade, I would not be accepting these assurances from UK company personnel and government officials that everything was on track. Because the facts, unfortunately, say otherwise.
Yes, I would, far be it from me to tell people their jobs, but his job is not to actually take UK stuff at face value, but to actually represent the taxpayers of Australia.
Well, so, and have an inquiring mind, including when you get adverse information.
Have an inquiring mind, exactly. Now, what that actually means is I think we have zero confidence that Snorkuses will be delivered into Australian service on the current schedule. No. That means the 3 to 5 Virginias will have to end up being 5 Virginias. Mm-hmm. And those, if it, the US doesn't have 3, it certainly doesn't have 5. So all of that fundamental issue of what risks have been retired around the Snorkus or the AUKUS program, Virginias and then Snorkus, what risks have been retired? Actually, no risks have been retired. And in fact, a key risk has been realised, and that is, will the US have more submarines than it was going to have, and will there be, you know, an excess of submarines available for us?
And the answer is no.
The answer is no. So that risk has actually been realised.
Are you saying there might be a sequel to the current AUKUS review, and it might be called Revenge of the Colby, like Revenge of the Sith, where the unfortunate problem that America faces is it hasn't got enough submarines, it's not going to have any more, and the UK is not only not going to help, it's going to cause more problems. And so a future Colby will get to do this review all again.
That is highly likely. Now, because AUKUS permeates everything, it permeated Osman. And we had this very chummy sort of kickoff to Osman. And we
the
had
Australia-US ministerial meeting, for those not immersed in
this stuff. Where our foreign minister and our defence minister and their secretary of state and their secretary, officially still the Secretary of Defence.
Secretary of War,
but according in MAGA language, the Secretary of War, they stood there and, you know, gave their opening spiels, all very, very chummy.
Yep.
And I have to say, it was a very steamy meeting, Michael. Ooh, very steamy.
These things are normally quite official.
No,
affairs. This
well,
got a bit
because
steamy.
Because Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, said at the direction of the President, AUKUS is full steam ahead.
Excellent.
Well, Senator Wong,
she's not going to be out.
She's not going to be outdone by that. She said, "We welcome President Trump's statement. We are full steam ahead." And for emphasis, she said it again, we are full steam ahead. So the
Penny
score,
Wong brings double the steam. I love
we've
that.
Hardly kicked Osman off, and we're already at three steams.
Three steams.
Then Pete Hegseth.
Yeah.
And as we move, as was mentioned, full
steam.
You got it. Ahead on AUKUS. We applaud Australia's upcoming delivery of an additional $1 billion to help expand U.S. submarine production capacity.
Actually, there is a lot to like if you're Pete Hegseth with...
Here, I applaud. Hand the suitcase over, Dick. I'll just get my people to count it. We have confiscated from the Venezuelans some of those nifty machines that count the bills really quickly. We're just going to run it through that. Don't leave town until we've run the machines over the money and... But thank you.
Does
thank
Dickie Miles get to keep the bag? Like, is it the same bag that brings the next billion? Or is he going
to
buy a new bag?
It has to be a very strong bag. Yeah. And then, once again, Aussies will not be outdone by those Americans.
No.
Richard Miles wraps it up. President Trump has given us the motto for our meeting today, which is full
steam.
You got it. Ahead. And it is very much full
steam
ahead in terms of the alliance, in terms of the progress on AUKUS.
Well, so, and look,
very
say,
steamy.
I say hats off to those four senior figures from the US and Australia, because unlike the disinterest shown in the technical detail by the submarine agency, these four ministers all know that nuclear reactors warm water to
steam.
Power the
it's all about the steam.
It is all about steam.
But I just love it how these platitudes just allow you to say whatever crap you want. You don't need to have any kind of thought, no originality.
How many full steam
you
ahead?
Just repeat a Trumpian platitude.
How many times did they just repeat Donald Trump? How many times?
Weren't you counting?
No.
6.
Well, see, that's half the denials about any detail of the AUKUS review that Dickie Miles came up with. So 6 and 12, they're auspicious numbers, aren't they?
Mm.
6 full steams, 12 denials.
Now, so that was the start of Osman, and at the end we got the usual kind of readout from it. You've gone through it in some detail, Michael. Is there anything new and different in the? Was anything agreed?
I got quite nostalgic. More of the same?
You got actually, nostalgic.
In fact, I had to check.
You know, the nostalgia. It's not what it used to be.
No, it's not. I checked three times that I was looking at the right document because I was sure I was in 2015 or maybe even 2012.
Mm.
It was like the Trump administration hadn't happened, the Ukraine war hadn't happened, China's aggression and behaviour in the South China Sea and towards Taiwan wasn't really happening. It was a very nostalgic time for me, and I loved reading it. I did think, as an Australian, there was an uncomfortable feeling about, as our military gets weaker, we're just opening the kimono wider and wider to the US to bring aircraft, their marines, logistics, just under the force posture initiatives. That's the bit where there's real momentum in this relationship. It's the US.
The US using, stationing more and more assets and people here.
Using Australian soil for their military. And that's our government's plan, that we are becoming even more dependent than ever before.
That does seem to be the thinking. It's like, yes, the US wants people to be spending 3.5% of GDP. Our view seems to be, well, we should get credit for geography. We're at 2%, but giving the US access to our geography has got to be worth, what, 1.5%? 2%? Yeah. I mean, so we're there already, Michael.
And I just, the other thing I thought was, this AUSMIN meeting and the joint statement is simply jarringly out of step with almost every aspect of the Trump administration's recently released national security strategy.
Well, yeah, so let's move on to the national security strategy, because you said this AUSMIN doesn't seem to be much different from previous ones. I would say, however, the national security strategy seems very different from previous ones. And, you know, if I'm going to sum this up, I think it is the ultimate articulation of Karenism.
Yes.
We've spoken about Karenism before.
This
view of incredibly privileged, wealthy people that somehow they're being done by, mistreated, and people are out to get them, so they need to stand up for themselves.
Yeah, it's sort of the privileged, wealthy entitlement mindset that you combine with a deep grievance that you haven't even got more.
Yes,
and you blame everybody else.
And there's this view that somehow I'm being oppressed because I saw a black person in my neighbourhood.
Well,
but that seems to be
world.
What this NS national security strategy is. I mean, it does seem to be written in pure Karen, pure MAGA. It does seem to essentially be Project 2025 out of the Heritage Institute warmed up all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the sort of the underpinning worldview beneath this is actually everything is a zero-sum game.
Yes, well, if
anything good happens to you, that has to have come at my cost.
Yes, and transnational corporation and institutions are all evil and are designed to do America down. Great powers do what their power allows them to do, and smaller powers do what they must within their spheres of influence. There's a very strong sphere of influence flavour for this where...
Yes, well, what are we're calling it? It's the Monroe Doctrine with Trumpian overtones.
Corollary. I think it's a real lot of humility from Trump to only be a corollary to another US president.
Yeah, I mean...
And Marilyn Monroe was a great American president. They don't.
I think it's a different Monroe.
It's different Monroe.
Different Monroe,
Well, look,
but she was a great American.
Well, she must have been his daughter, I imagine. Sorry. Anyway, great humble statement from Donald Trump to be a corollary to Monroe.
So I guess all you can say it is what you would expect it to be coming out of this administration, but that is fundamentally different from previous national security statements. And look, I'm the first one to say that I wasn't a huge fan of previous American national security statements. Mm-hmm. They were full of platitudes.
Yeah.
There are actually bits in here where I sort of go, yeah, I actually sympathize with this. So this view that it's, you know, the role of the US to solve every problem in the world, the role of the US to solve every conflict in the world, the role of the US to essentially be everything to all people in the world, I'm actually kind of sympathetic with that. Marcus, is this the right answer to that problem, though?
You're out of step with our government and with Penny Wong and Dickie Miles, because their plan is for us to be more dependent on America. So America has to solve our problems, buddy, right? So get with the program.
Well, that is, yes. So this is a document, shall we say, full of contradictions.
It is. You know, it's an enigma wrapped in a conundrum with Trumpian overtones.
Yes. So a number of people who have written about this have used the term cognitive dissonance. And I would agree
transnational post-nation liberal elites who have destroyed everything about American culture and the traditional family, and who probably vaccinate their children and other children against childhood diseases. Is that who you're talking about?
Mm. Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, I think, however, if you were an Australian government minister, you would be maybe a smidge concerned about the lack of a role for Australia in here.
What are you talking about? There's three mentions.
There are three mentions. The first one is, it says, in our dealings with Taiwan and Australia, we'll maintain our determined rhetoric on increased defence spending. Now, rhetoric is an odd term of words there, because in normal kind of everyday English, it means sort of empty language. But
I think it shows the wonderful success of Dickie Miles around the defence budget discussion with him in America. Remember, he said, we're up for the conversation. So Hegseth has accepted that. He's up for the conversation. He's going to have determined rhetoric about our defence spending.
So it does get back to the AUKUS review, the unstated things in there that Mr. Miles doesn't want to disclose. You do wonder, is there something in there about an expectation that Australia does meet the US rhetoric
on increased defence spending? Karens and America being aggrieved about how everyone's taken advantage of it. This national security strategy out of the Trump administration is replete with allies and partners have been free riding on America, and they need to move from burden sharing to burden shifting. They need to spend 5% of GDP on defence.
Yes, that's the 3.5% plus this fuzzy 1.5% of other stuff.
Yeah. But I just don't get, if you're going to strengthen AUKUS, how does Australia get out of jail free card for spending 2%? And get an American nuclear submarine? It can't all be that $1 billion suitcase full of cash, can it?
Well, maybe that's why Mr. Miles doesn't want to share the contents. But, I mean, when I read the National Security Strategy, and it's a pretty short document, so it's, people out there in listener land, have a read, but the contradictions are quite striking. So this first one, we shouldn't be hectoring countries to behave the way we want them to. And it singles out the Middle East. We shouldn't be hectoring the Middle East about how it should live, and we shouldn't be telling them to adopt our forms of government. On the other hand, one of the most vehement parts of this whole document is this hectoring of the Europeans, saying you guys have lost your heritage, you're going to be wiped out, you're going to be swamped by mass migration, you've lost your way. I mean, if that's not hectoring, I don't know what is.
Civilizational demise.
Yes.
Yes. And that's because of their cultural and political behavior. It's not because of the threat of an aggressive Russia. In fact, Russia gets a free pass.
Yeah, no, the Europeans are bringing this upon themselves.
The Europeans are the ones that are insisting on the Ukraine war happening. It's got nothing to do with Vladimir Putin,
up to us, the US, to go out and hector other parts of the world, unless they're the Europeans.
Well, and that I love some of the formulations around that they won't tell anyone what to do except when they will. So they say, we seek good relations and peaceful commercial relations. And in fact, this is a commerce-based security strategy. Without imposing on them democratic or other social change that differs widely from their traditions and histories, we recognise and affirm there is nothing inconsistent or hypocritical in acting according to such a realistic assessment or in maintaining good relations with countries whose governing systems and societies differ from ours, even as we push like-minded friends, i.e. the whole of Europe, to uphold our shared norms, furthering our interests by doing so. So we will intervene with our democratic allies. We'll intervene in their politics.
But that's not hypocritical.
It's not hypocritical, but we have to leave the Saudis, the Russians and the Chinese alone.
So, like, when I look at this, I go, all right, it's kind of what you expected, but it is still quite striking, I think, how far we have come.
But I predict that the Australian policy establishment will ignore all of the things that should really disturb any Australian government, which is the free pass given to Russia and China and North Korea and Iran and autocratic regimes like the Saudis. They will overlook the way America is treating its NATO allies and think, well, that doesn't apply to us, thank God.
Because we've given the US real estate.
They'll be comfortable with the fact that the only mentions to us, of Australia are kind of patronising, and they would just focus on all the good things. And they won't even be disturbed by the Trump corollary to the Monroe Doctrine around the Western Hemisphere, and that being the absolute priority for America's security.
Well, it's this kind of second priority, because border security very clearly states is the first priority.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Seen through the lens of migration.
Well, migration is what's destroying Europe, according to this document.
And then the Western Hemisphere.
I did think, as I read this stuff about how immigration is destroying Europe, I remembered the French gave Americans some gift. It's a statue that's in the middle of the harbour in New York.
No, what are you talking about?
It's a woman with a torch.
No.
And there's a,
it's different from the Gold Crown, the Koreans.
It's not Marilyn Monroe. I don't know the woman's name, but it's a statue of a woman. It's in New York Harbor. It's named after a Subaru, a Liberty, Statue of Liberty.
Oh, okay.
Subaru Liberty. And it's got a plaque on the bottom, something about give me your tired, your hungry, your downtrodden masses.
You don't want them. They sound dirty.
It's almost smelly. Like America as a nation is an immigrant nation built
No.
But immigration is now the biggest evil that America has to combat, and that's why
next to wokeism.
Say Europe is in such trouble.
Next to wokeism. But look, I think it's it's the kind of document you would expect out of a MAGA administration whose intellectual underpinnings come out of the Heritage Institute. Nothing there. But I do think it is slightly divorced from reality in a number of ways. So, for example, it proclaims the advantages of the US. So on the one hand, it's like, gosh, everybody else is so mean to us, taking advantage of us.
Yeah.
But look at all of our advantages. We're the richest country in the world, smartest country in the world, strongest technological base, strongest industrial base. But I think you're kind of a little deluded when you think you have the strongest technological and industrial base in the world, because quite frankly, China is kicking your ass in so many areas of technology at the moment. Meanwhile, you've declared war
on the
institutions in America
that
generate technology and technological innovation.
Well, and I thought there was this thing, you know, that one of their big advantages is their network of partners and allies. And
the partners and allies who've been taking advantage of them and need to get back in their box.
It says America retains tremendous assets, including a historic record of benefiting our allies and partners. Well, most of the document says, well, those days are over, buddy. So it's a tremendous asset that they've benefited their allies and partners, but it's a problem that has to be confronted and stopped. Another contradiction. Let me give you about this Western Hemisphere stuff, though.
Mm-hmm.
This is what...
So Western Hemisphere, known to most people as the Americas.
The Americas.
So North and South America.
I think it's why Trump wants to get hold of Canada and Greenland, and why he wants to invade Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
But release the convicted drug criminal, the Honduran president. After years of neglect, the United States will reassert and enforce the Monroe Doctrine, and thank you for correcting me about which Monroe it was, to restore American preeminence in the Western Hemisphere. So the place that they do want to dominate, even though no one should dominate anyone, is the Western Hemisphere. And to protect our homeland and access to key geographies throughout the region, we will deny non-hemispheric competitors the ability to position forces or other threatening capabilities or to own or control strategically vital assets in our hemisphere. I just thought, imagine if you replaced the Western Hemisphere with Indo-Pacific and voted from Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a naked assertion that America wants to dominate its sphere of influence geographically. And at the same time, we're meant to believe that America is going to work with partners and allies that it is treating appallingly to stop China from doing what it recognises great powers will do and what it is explicitly doing itself.
Well, yeah, so there is this language here of, well, yes, the nation state is the unit of the international system and all countries are roughly equal. But then there's also this, but hang on, the US is special, so some countries are more equal than others and, you know, we are the most equalist, you know, being the US. And so it is full of this, yes, we want to work with partners, but if they don't want to work with us, we'll make them. So speaking about the Western Hemisphere, a.k.a. North and South America, we want other nations to see us as their partner of first choice.
Mm-hmm.
And we will, through various means, discourage their collaboration with others. So we want to be their partner of first choice, and by stopping them turning towards others, by forcing them not to collaborate with others.
A lot of forced marriages turn out very well.
So this, we're their partner of first choice, but we're not actually going to give them a choice.
Yeah, so this domination's okay as long as it's me doing it. The other, so they're very against any transnational institutions or systems because they've done America down and the nation state is the unique unit.
You mean this international system the US set up?
Yes, the international system after World War II that America designed and ran to its enormous benefit. That's right.
Yeah.
But there is one area of transnational institutional dominance that America explicitly wants to maintain, and that's its financial system dominance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they want to dominate the financial world's financial and capital system because preserving and growing their dominance is a unique strength that will remain the envy of the world. So dominance is out except for when it's in, and that's the Western Hemisphere and the global financial system.
Yes. Anyway, so, I mean, it is a sort of amusing read. It's also a depressing read because it is kind of what you would expect out of this administration. But I would agree with you, Michael, that the incongruity between the tone of the national security strategy and things we're seeing come out of our government about the alliance is just so glaring. It is.
And the Osmin meeting, that's why it was like something out of the past. One last thing, China in this national security strategy. So it's a predatory economic actor, and it's not doing nice things
necessarily. They've been robbing us blind, Michael.
But the paramount goal that the US government has for the China-US relationship is it's a mutually beneficial economic relationship. And when you combine that with their approach that the world is spheres of influence dominated by big powers, that's very bad news for any of us US partners and allies here in the Indo-Pacific.
Well, again, this is another one of those areas. Sorry, I know you're trying to wrap it up, but I'm just confused because on the one hand, there is this sort of language of, yeah, we can work with China and, you know, you've got the G2, the US and China, and we'll make it work. But then there's some of these little skeletons or fossils, shall we say, fossils in there, sort of the Elbridge Colby kind of view that, you know, China wants to dominate the South China Sea and we can't let them do that because 30% of the world's trade goes through the South China Sea. So we can't let, you know, one power dominate there. So there's sort of these echoes of this kind of traditional US view of we can't let any rival power, you know, exercise hegemony over any part of the world. But then they don't really want to do anything about it.
No. Well, you know, my view is the inner Colby is smothered by the Trump corollary. So that is the thing. And I suppose the last observation I'd make is this is an extremely toadying document for US government officials to put together to extol the incredible, amazing uniqueness of what they put in all capitals, the President of Peace.
The President of Peace.
Capital T, capital P, capital O, capital P. So, and
one of the funniest things about that is that they listed all the wars that the President of Peace has solved.
Many.
The first one was Thailand versus Cambodia. The day after this was published, Thailand and Cambodia went back at it again.
But that's
so not terribly enduring peace.
That lets him solve it again. So, yeah, that it's a uniquely toadying piece of.
You mean a bit like a US cabinet meeting?
Yeah, it's like a cabinet meeting in text.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so does that mean Donald Trump slept through this when he read it?
Well, he almost had a corollary when he read the first draft. All right, Marcus, we better get. back to shore. It's starting to get a bit windy and choppy here. Great to talk with you.
Okay, bye-bye.